Welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Varsha.
And I'm Devin. And after an unplanned hiatus, we're back.
Yay!
Yeah, I had a really, really hard month, just like mental health wise and just family shit going on. And then also, as I put on the Facebook group, I was drugged at a bar. And I'm pretty shook up from that. So
I just want to say, ban men. That is my sentiment.
Oh my God, seriously. I'm so angry still. So everything was okay though. Everything turned out okay for me. And I was really lucky. I was with friends who took good care of me. And there was a woman whom I don't know. I don't remember. I've never met her, but she put me in a lift and texted me and followed up with me the next morning and basically was like the person who saved me.
Yeah.
And I don't know anything about her, but she's amazing. So men are canceled.
Men are canceled. And that leads into exactly what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that it's so today we're going to focus on one topic and one topic only. We are going to talk about abortion and the abortion bills that have been cropping up in state legislatures. I think the thing about this is, you know, we'll talk about the specifics of the two bills that we're going to, you know, kind of delve into. But I think what's really important about what's going on right now is that this has nothing to do with Trump. And that, I mean, that's not totally true. You know, Trump and the fact that he got two SCOTUS picks definitely has something to do with this. But ultimately, this is a structural and institutional problem that will not go away, when Trump's out of office.
Yeah, because like the main thing that people remember about abortion and Donald Trump is that when he was in during the campaign, when he was running for president, he was asked about abortion. He said there has to be some sort of punishment, right? And every single Republican, right. Every single reasonable Republican was like, oh, yeah, I don't agree with that. But that's not true. That's fundamentally untrue. Because
right.
as you see right. through all these abortion bills that are passed, these heartbeat bans, what they're saying is we do want to punish the women. It is not about abortion. It is not about healthcare. It is not about fetuses. It is about punishing women.
Exactly. And this issue is not about life. It's not about pregnancy. It's not even really about healthcare. It's about control of women's bodies. And if anyone tells you differently, they are lying to you. So, Varsha, do you want to – we're going to talk about two specific things, one in Georgia and one in Alabama. Can you take us through first the Georgia bill?
Yeah. So first, the Georgia bill was signed into law on Tuesday, right, this past Tuesday. And basically it is – a so-called heartbeat bill. Basically, it means that after the sixth week of pregnancy, abortion is banned. But the issue with that is after the sixth week, most women don't know they're pregnant by the sixth week of pregnancy. And to be clear, as people right. probably know, if you've been pregnant or if you're a woman and you've learned about this, your date of pregnancy begins with your first date of your last period. So it could take weeks to figure out that you're pregnant. And even if you figured it out,
especially over the counter pregnancy mm-hmm. tests, they can't detect your pregnancy at 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm just going to throw my own anecdote into the ring here. But when I was trying to get pregnant, like this is something that I wanted. I remember I took a pregnancy test on a Saturday because I had tickets to a bourbon tasting Saturday night that I had bought several weeks prior, and I wanted to go, but obviously I wasn't going to go if I was pregnant. So I took a pregnancy test and it was negative. So I went to the bourbon tasting. And then on Monday, I took a pregnancy test again and it was positive. So, I mean, that's how like it could change over a day, right? And if you take it too early, I mean, it can't detect pregnancy.
And the issue that a lot of people have brought up on Twitter and people who are analyzing this bill is even if you found out, it would mean you have a window of like less than 10 days to get to a clinic. And in Georgia and in other red states, right. you have to have a second visit before you can even be accepted for like an abortion. They have right. like a waiting period. Like they don't have a fucking right. waiting period to buy a right. fucking gun in this country, but you have to have a waiting period to have a doctor assure you that an abortion is okay. But another thing that's an issue with this bill that people have been talking about is women and doctors can actually be criminalized if you have a miscarriage. Even if the fucking miscarriage right. is not your fault, you can be criminalized. You can be criminally liable, right? And so I think that's yeah. what's really dangerous about this is people are, mainly men, are like, oh, the law won't be interpreted that way, or don't worry, they're only passing this law to goad the Supreme Court into, like, you know, messing up Roe v. Wade in another way, like, blah, 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 blah. I don't give a fuck, right? This is really dangerous. And I think the one thing people...
Well, let's think about that yeah. argument. Let's think about that argument for a second, because what they're saying is, oh, don't worry, the law is not going to be interpreted that way. Then why the fuck is the law written that way? Like, don't give me that. That is some gaslighting mm-hmm. bullshit right there. And to say that, oh, this was only passed so that it can go to the Supreme Court, that like, no, that's not how this works. That's not how law in this country yeah. works. And so to tell me not to worry about it because, I mean, first of all of the reasons you give me to not worry about it are bullshit. But then when you try to feed me this nonsense about, again, this goes back to this like paternal, patriarchal, in like a classic sense kind of style of governance where it's like, oh, don't worry. Like you don't get to have a say, but I'm going to take good care of you because I care about you and I'm going to make sure that you're okay. So don't worry your pretty little head about it.
And I think what's key to remember is in Georgia, this bill technically actually does not go into effect until 2020. So it is true that Georgia Governor George Kemp, who should not be fucking governor, has like an agenda with this. And I get that. Mm-hmm. But fundamentally, this reveals the agenda for Republicans in this country, right? They want to control women's bodies and they will do whatever it takes to get to that point, right? And so this argument that, oh, right. Republicans don't actually want to catch the car that they're chasing, I don't care if they actually want to do it or they really want to do it or they are going to do it. This is what's happening. They are trying to right. ban abortion in this country. And it doesn't matter if, you know, a year from now or 2 years from now or 3 years from now that only blue states have access to abortion. There are thousands of women in red states who are going to be affected by this.
Well, and also another state. So Georgia is just the latest. There are five other states, six total, that have kind of heartbeat or 6 week abortion bans on the books. Now, I don't think any of them have taken effect, that they're tied up in court, but they are out there. And one of them, I just want to point out, one of the states is Missouri. And Missouri, to start with, before the quote unquote heartbeat bill, which again, it's not a heartbeat that you can detect at 6 weeks. It's a thickening of the lining in like the heart cavity. I'm not a doctor. I don't understand it. But all I know is that it's not exactly a heartbeat. But Missouri only has one abortion clinic in the whole motherfucking goddamn state. So before we even get into any of this 6 week nonsense, the thing about Roe v. Wade is just because abortion is legal, that doesn't mean it's accessible. You know, just because, you know, the option is there as a theoretical concept doesn't mean that it's actually attainable for huge swaths of the population, mostly women of color and poor women. Yep. So that's just, you know, so basically a lot of these in states, especially that have one goddamn clinic to start with, it's not even about further limiting the access, because the access is already almost non-existent. It's about punishment. It's about control. It's about taking it further. And that is why all of this gaslighting bullshit about, oh, don't worry about it, it's just a blah, 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 blah. It's already happening. Abortion is still functionally illegal is the wrong term, but functionally inaccessible for many, many women and people who can get pregnant.
I think what's really key is to really think about that control aspect, because just today, this is May 9th, Alabama tried to pass a bill, like Republicans tried to shove it into another bill. Republican senators, state senators, were basically, it would have banned almost all abortions at every state of pregnancy from conception onwards and would criminalize the procedure for doctors. So if a doctor even attempts an abortion, they could risk a 10-year prison sentence. And if they actually perform an abortion, they could risk a 99-year prison sentence. There were no exceptions within this bill that Republicans in Alabama tried to pass. There were no exceptions whatsoever. And so the fact that they are literally criminalizing it means that they agree with what Donald Trump said during the campaign. They believe in some sort of punishment for the woman. They really do. And they're going to find whatever way possible to do that.
Right. Well, and also, you know, and I also want to take a quick tangent about this idea of exceptions, right? So all of this stuff about abortion, except in the case of rape or incest. So I want to unpack that a little bit, because a lot of people kind of, not a, a lot of Republicans, especially a lot of, you know, anti-choicers use that as sort of like, oh, we're not heartless. You know, like this is obviously like, you know, in these extenuating circumstances, apparently not in the fucking state of Alabama, but, you know, we're not even touching that right this second. But, you know, it's basically like, oh, well, we have these exceptions. So first of all, what that tells me is, A, this isn't about life as it starts from conception as a principle, right? Because if there are exceptions, that means that you're saying, oh, well, I believe that a fetus is a life, so it's okay to, in their words, quote unquote, kill this life and not another because of the extenuating circumstances, which just on a sort of ideological basis doesn't really make sense, right? Just like, you know, being anti-choice and pro-death penalty doesn't really make a lot of logical sense either. But and so we take that. Okay, so that's one thing. But then unpack this further. In order to qualify for a rape exemption, you have to show a police report. So not only now is the government involved in your private medical decisions, but now you have to get law enforcement involved in that, you know, private medical decision. So, and let's take that even further. Like, let's say you were raped and you do file a police report. Not every woman or person who can get pregnant is believed by the police. They are not served by the police. So even if that were the case, they might not take the report. They may not believe you. Yep. Now what? You know? And same thing with incest. Okay, let's say you are being abused by a family member. You in order to get that exemption, you have to prove that it's happening. That means people have to believe you. The system has to be set up to believe you. And we know that that's not the case, because when women report rapes as it is, the majority are just dismissed, not believed, you know, asked what they were wearing. You know, it's such a cliche, but it's also true. And so I really hate when people even talk about these sort of exceptions or exemptions, because they're not really exceptions or exemptions. All they're doing is creating a system. It's an optics thing where they look like they're not heartless assholes, but while still functionally having no exceptions.
There's a lot of people talking about exceptions this way. And I agree with you totally, Devin, because I think every abortion, every desired abortion, every abortion that a woman or a person who's pregnant wants is healthcare. It is a necessary abortion, right? There is no one who should be making a decision about abortion besides the woman, besides the person who is pregnant, and their doctor. Those are the only two people involved. And if you are married or if you're in a relationship, then the person who is pregnant is allowed to bring in other people into that decision. But you are only allowed, we should only be allowed to make, to have a decision on abortion if we are the person going through that. Like, I am reminded of my favorite line from Friends, and I know it's like a dated TV show, but my favorite line from Friends is, no uterus, no opinion. It's from Rachel when she's pregnant. Like, it makes no sense that we are trying to decide what is medically relevant for somebody who is, who we are not going through that process, because pregnancy is, it is really dangerous. Like, we don't even have to talk about maternal mortality here. We know that. We know that pregnancy is a really personal experience for people who go through it. It is personal for people who have wanted pregnancies, unwanted pregnancies. It is personal for people who die, who live through this, people who have to pay these hospital bills. So there is no one who should be making this decision except the people who are pregnant and their doctors. And I think it really does come down to control and punishment, because you see this not just in these heartbeat bills, which are going to be fought and are going to go to the Supreme Court, but you also see this in these religious exception ideas at pharmacies, right? This idea that a woman who has a miscarriage or who needs to have a miscarriage or, you know, for some reason needs the medical, like the chemical abortion pill, goes to a pharmacist and the pharmacist rejects her, even though the doctor has agreed that this is the medication that she needs, right? Even if a woman is not choosing to take the morning after pill for the reason that she doesn't want to prevent pregnancy, even if she's choosing to take a pill to prevent, you know, getting sepsis from a miscarriage to properly pass, to safely pass that miscarriage, she is not allowed that. There are so many cases of this. And so it really is about control. There's also cases of states across this country, mainly red states, who are trying to limit access to birth control. It isn't about getting more babies out there for adoption. Right. It isn't about making sure that there are fewer abortions, because the way you get fewer abortions is you get more birth control. It is about controlling women.
Well, I mean, that's like the Health and Human Services guy, Scott Lloyd, who was OOR, Office of Refugee Resettlement, when he was director there. He's since been replaced. But he wrote about how birth control is tantamount to abortion. And that's not some like super fringe out there idea, right? Like, he's not some nut job. I mean, he is, but not for this specific reason. Who people fucking believe that, right? And the other thing I would like to point out is, you know, again, in a lot of these, going back to this like exceptions rule, this exceptions idea, you know, a lot of times they'll say if the mother's life is at risk, right? So that an abortion is acceptable if the mother's life is at risk. And again, that's a very subjective thing, right? It's a very, not subjective. Maybe if your life is in danger medically, like that's, there's no questioning that. But like, for example, the example I like to use, I don't know if I've talked about this on the show before, but I attempted suicide when I was like 15 weeks pregnant. So does that fall under the exception of the mother's life is in danger because of a mental illness, or, you know, because the pregnancy was causing me such stress and I couldn't take my bipolar medications? Does that count? Does it count if it's just a likelihood that you could die from it? What about if you have severe preeclampsia late in your pregnancy, you know, and, you know, but it's really late in your pregnancy and you don't know. I mean, these are all just things that, you know, when you talk, there is no other medical procedure that would be discussed like this. It's like there's, you know, and Republicans are always like, the government stay out of my life, states' rights, you know, leave me the fuck alone type of people, except when it comes to this. Like, there are HIPAA laws in place. Really? If I went to the doctor and got an abortion, you shouldn't be able to know about it because you shouldn't be able to access my goddamn medical records.
So I don't really want to talk about 2020, but I do want to talk about one narrative that's really forming, and Democrats are doing an only okay job of combating this narrative. So on Saturday, Trump was at a rally and he said this. Okay, this is a quote from him. I didn't say this. He said, "The baby is born. The mother meets with the doctor. They take care of the baby. They wrap the baby beautifully. And then the doctor and the mother determine whether or not they will execute the baby." That is not a thing that fucking happens. Okay? That is bananas. There is no such thing as late-term abortions. Abortions in the third trimester only happen if the baby, if the fetus's life is at risk or the mother's life is at risk. It is so rare, right? And the way that Democrats are talking about this recently, Amy Klobuchar was on Fox, and she was mentioning this as like, oh, obviously the third trimester should be an exception. We shouldn't be talking about choice during that period. Like, I don't know, I don't remember exactly what she said, but she was feeding into this, right? Same thing with a bunch of other Democrats. There are very few Democrats who are really unequivocal about being pro-choice. And it's really important that we be unequivocal about that, because if we feed into this narrative that, oh, there are so many abortions happening in the third trimester, you are letting Republicans get away with a lie. And you're making it easier for them to justify a 6-week abortion ban. You're making it easier for them to justify a 20-week abortion ban, right? It is unacceptable. And that's what really, really frustrates me, is that we are trying to appeal to the quote-unquote center. But there is no center on abortion. There is one option. The one option is you believe the choice should be made up to the mother and the doctor. The other option is you believe the government should have a right to say when or not a person can get an abortion. Those are the two options. There's no real center in this.
Right. Well, and not to be like, you know, that person, JK, I'm always that person, but like, this is some like Handmaid's Tale 1984 bullshit we've got going on right here. And the fact of the matter is like, I like how you put that first. There's no fucking center. This is not up for debate. Like, the fact that it is up for debate speaks to a larger political strategy by primarily in the beginning, the Christian right. But I mean, ultimately, this discussion is not about babies. It's not about pregnancy. It's not about adoptions. It's about the control of women's bodies. Because if you can't control when you get pregnant, or if you stay pregnant, or, you know, if you want a family or you don't want a family, so much of your agency is taken away. And it's so frustrating because this is such it's a topic that makes people deeply uncomfortable. And I think that's why the narrative has been allowed to get away from us as much as it has, because people don't want to talk about it. You know, part of the strategy too is, I want to talk a little bit about the strategy of getting this case to the Supreme Court, and we can go off about Justice Buttface some more. But, like, you know, part of this is, you know, you talk about 6-week abortion bans, you talk about criminal prosecution for doctors and people who are seeking abortions. And you get very quickly to this idea of like, oh, well, okay, 6 weeks, maybe not. But what about 10 weeks, right? That seems more reasonable. Okay, it's not going to be like jail time, but like, what about a hefty fine? Like, that seems like a good compromise. And then we get like sort of numb to how absolutely out there bananas fucking ridiculous this is that we're even discussing it in the first place.
I mean, I think what really frustrates me is that people who talk about banning abortion, they refuse to acknowledge the really simple point that banning abortion will not end abortion in this country. It won't. It will lead people who are pregnant to go into back alleys or attempt abortion by themselves, not in safe medical facilities. It will lead to women dying. Cutting back birth control and leading to more unwanted pregnancies is going to lead to women dying. And it's not just because maternal mortality is so high in this country. It is because we are not providing actual healthcare for people who just want healthcare. And it's so frustrating. It makes me so angry. And the thing is, the Handmaid's comparison is correct, because the fundamental basis of that book, of that story, is that in this world that we live in, men are controlling women. You're living in a patriarchal society that's controlling women. And I think that's what's really key about this, right? And this is so evident in not just in abortion, but also in the way that we talk about birth control, in the way that we talk about medical procedures, in the way that we talk about rape culture. The onus is always on the women. There is never any slack given to women. And it's so, so obvious, but no one wants to talk about it because you're right, it makes them uncomfortable, right? It's so easy to go back to the 90s and to have the Bill Clinton line that we should have abortion safe, accessible, and rare. But the thing is, the rare shouldn't matter if you are just focusing on the health of the woman and the consent of the woman and the role of the doctor. If you're just focusing on that, you will be able to, you know, avoid caring about the rare, right? You'll avoid being put in the position where you want to make medical decisions for people that you don't fucking know.
Right. Right. Well, and I also do think, you know, I love how you put that, but not only will it not stop abortions, like making them illegal is not going to stop them. It is also only going to make them more dangerous for, again, a subset of people. if I ever need an abortion, whether it's legal or not, I will get it. I'm a wealthy white woman. I have fucking options, right? I will be able to get one no matter what. So this is not about affecting, you know, white, you know, upwardly mobile, wealthy, you know, people who can get pregnant. That's not what this is about. This is going to make it more dangerous for women of color, for trans women, for poor women, for women who live in rural areas and in states that don't have abortion clinics, who don't have days off that they can travel and go find a provider or go out of country or any of the things that a top 1% of people who can get pregnant will have access to always, no matter what. And this is also part of the Handmaid's Tale comparison, because that's where they tiered women on how they control them. They were controlling all women. But if you were a wealthy woman, you were married to one of the men in power, there was a different set of rules for you. There was a different set of constraints. And, you know, I'll spoil a little bit of Handmaid's Tale, but you know, there was all this stuff about like regulation of sexuality and prohibited types of sexuality, and like the men in power would go to sex clubs and because there's always access to it, there's only access to a limited population. And again, you know, I want to go back to this idea of like that it's healthcare. I mean, I love you making that point, because it's healthcare. Like, are we not talking about vasectomies? Like, so if this is so much about like population and abortion and adoption and getting more babies into the world, like why aren't vasectomies illegal? Why aren't we talking about, you know, men's role in this? And like, are we talking about all birth control or just birth control that is for women? So, you know, hormonal birth control or IUDs or you know, those sort of things. Are we talking about condom? Like, where are we going with this?
Yeah, I just want to say to all the men listening out there, if abortion is banned, you masturbating is now genocide. Yeah,
right?
Just.
I mean, it's.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Just going to say it. Like, anytime you spill your seed, it's now you're killing thousands of babies. What are you doing? You can't do that. Right? It's so frustrating. And the thing is, it, like, the cognitive dissonance is so obvious, because there's yet another fucking bill in Texas, right? This was introduced a while ago. This was about a month ago. And basically, this bill, just, like, wait for it, criminalizes all abortions. Again, I'm going to say the word, no exceptions for rape or incest at all. But here's the kicker. It's possible to charge a woman for homicide for having the procedure. And so it's possible for women to get the fucking death penalty for getting an abortion. And this is what the representative, the Republican state legislator, Tony Tinderholt, said. He said the bill would make it would make people consider the repercussions of having sex. So the man who gets a woman pregnant, no, he doesn't get the death penalty. He doesn't get charged with a felony for homicide, for not wearing a condom, or for not getting a vasectomy, or whatever. But the woman who gets pregnant, No, she gets charged with a felony. Right. She could get charged with a felony.
Right?
It is clearly about creating and cementing a patriarchal system where there is a double standard, because it is not about life. It is about controlling women.
Right.
And I want to bring in another dimension into this, because I talked about this a while ago with a friend of mine, but the reason that a lot of like white nationalists and like neo-Nazis are against abortion is because it pushes back against the idea that they can create more babies.
Right.
Right? It means they can't produce more perfect white babies. Right? If abortion is allowed, if women are allowed to be feminists and be pro-choice and, you know, work outside the home, blah, 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 it means they can't produce more white babies in their own heads.
Right.
Right? So there are so many dimensions to this, but it all boils down to the fact that the way these legislators, these men, because every single Republican senator in Alabama and most of these Republican legislators across this country are white men.
Right.
And this is what they think about. This is how they understand, you know, building a new America, whatever the heck. It is about controlling women.
Yeah. A lot of these bills, you kind of touched on it, are talking about personhood, right? So if you could be charged mm-hmm. with homicide, because of an abortion, then you're giving personhood rights, personhood status to a fetus, which I, you know, for the sake of argument, let's go with that for a hot second. Okay. So you're giving personhood status to a fetus. So let me propose this scenario. An undocumented immigrant gets pregnant in America. Now, we know, I know that they're trying to get rid of this, but we know that any baby born in America is an American citizen. So, a citizen of the United States. So, let's say we now have personhood laws in place for fetuses. Does that mean that now this woman is pregnant? She has a fetus. That fetus is considered a person. So, that person is then a citizen of the United States. So, no matter if apparently it doesn't matter if she gives birth or not, or if she gives birth in the US or not, she could go abroad and give birth again and that would still be a citizen, right? Yeah. Is that what
no,
we're talking
see, that
about?
That doesn't count. That doesn't count because Kavanaugh doesn't see brown people.
Right.
Like, that's what really bothers me. Because like Tinderholt, this guy in Texas, said this, he said this exact same thing. He says, "My bill simply accomplishes one goal. It brings equal treatment for unborn human beings under the law." And so there you were perfect. You're totally right. There's another dimension to all of these bills and to other aspects of other legislation that's pushing against women's rights is these personhood clauses, right? This idea that if you bring personhood in, you're making it possible to fuck with the 14th Amendment, but fundamentally to fuck with the 14th Amendment just to fuck with women. That's right. What it is.
Right.
Right. It's and just to fuck with specifically American women, because you can find exceptions for people who you don't want here.
Right.
Right. As we saw with like the Muslim ban ruling, SCOTUS, especially Chief Justice Roberts, is totally fine just making shit up when he writes his opinions, right?
They really
totally,
are. Just
they're
making
totally
shit
fine
up.
With it. Because that, whenever like someone tells me that, oh yeah, like why are you worried? Chief Justice Roberts would never got Obamacare. He already saved it once. Or Chief Justice Roberts would never strike down Roe v. Wade. Are you fucking bananas? Like you don't have to look at all of Roberts' right. record. You can just look at the Muslim ban case and know that all of these heartbeat bills are a deep danger to Roe v. Wade because yeah. Roberts doesn't care, okay? He is not your friend. The Supreme Court is not your friend.
Right.
And so it's what really bothers me is that there are people, specifically men, who are uncomfortable talking about this, who don't want to talk about this, who don't think this is a real issue, who don't think this is an economic issue or a class issue or a race issue. They just think it's a woman's issue. They want to find a way to console me. And I will not be fucking consoled.
Yeah.
I will not be consoled because this is serious. It doesn't matter if I live in California and I will be fine. I can get birth control. I have insurance, blah, 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 blah. This is about how if one state is able to take this action, this is a danger to all women, but also to men, right?
Right.
This is an economic issue. This is a class issue. This is a race issue. This is fundamentally more than a woman's issue. Yeah. And I think the incorporation of personhood into this discussion is exactly what makes it so dangerous and so universalizing. And
right.
It makes it so clear that Democratic candidates who are running for president or for Senate or for Congress or for state legislators or for whatever should be really unequivocal on their stance on pro-choice.
Right. Right. And because the thing is if this does make it up to SCOTUS and there is a challenge to Roe v. Wade, which is what they're saying, they're not even like hiding it. You know, these people are saying, oh, it's not actually Harvey Bill. We're just trying to challenge Roe v. Wade. At which point, if Roe v. Wade gets overturned, then the heartbeat bills are moot, right? So them using that as a way to console women and people who get pregnant and being like, oh, don't worry about it. We're just trying to challenge Roe v. Wade in the Supreme Court. Well, yeah, that's a fucking problem. I have a fucking problem with that, you dick. But anyway, if it makes it up to SCOTUS, and this is where, because like I said at the top of the show, I mean, fundamentally, these bills are being passed in state legislatures, and ultimately it doesn't really have anything to do with Trump. I mean, Trump might have, you know, is fanning this flame and is saying a whole bunch of really wild shit about it and has said a bunch of wild shit about it. But ultimately, I believe this would happen even if we had someone else in the Oval Office. You know, these are state legislatures. Like, these are people who have been fucking committed to this for a long time. But where it intersects with the loser in chief, is if it makes it to SCOTUS, and SCOTUS got to and Trump got to pick two Supreme Court nominees, that is where I can never forgive it, because it's in real danger. Like, Roberts is not gonna.
Yeah. Also, like, Chief Justice Gorsuch literally wrote a giant ass book that nobody read except for him and his mother, probably, about how he's against euthanasia. That book wasn't about how he's against euthanasia. That book was basically a screed on why he's against abortion. That is why he wrote about euthanasia. Right. He doesn't give a fuck about old people choosing when they want to die. Yeah, he cares about using that legal precedent to talk about whether or not abortion should be legal in this country. And spoiler alert, he doesn't think it should be legal. Right. Yep. So there are like two types of people on the right side of the Supreme Court. There's people like Roberts and Thomas and Gorsuch who have these deep ideological mindsets where they are definitely against abortion. There's nothing that could really sway them. Like, if Roe v. Wade was hurt today, they would definitely be against it, right? Then there's Alito and Kavanaugh, who are much more partisan. And so that's a little bit different in the sense that, like, if tomorrow the Federalist Society or Donald Trump or the Republican Party as a whole came out and said, we love abortion, they would be like, yeah, we love abortion too. So you have these five people, for various different reasons, they're going to rule against women every single fucking time.
Yeah,
so
twice on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. So it really isn't about whether or not this bill in Georgia goes effect in 2020 or goes effect now, or it's going to go up to the Supreme Court. It's fundamentally about what are the values for every single Republican in this country that supports bills like these, and how do you get them to understand that this is unacceptable, that this is going to lead to women dying, right? And that's why I brought it back to Democratic candidates who are not being unequivocal about abortion, because this is no longer the 1990s. We live in a post-ACA world. We live in a post-Me Too world where people understand the repercussions of living with rape culture. People understand the repercussions of living with and without birth control. People understand much, much more about abortion and motherhood and adoption and et cetera, et cetera. So Democrats have had the time to think about this. It's been over 20 years. They've had the time to make their decisions, like, get over it and have an unequivocal stance, right? Right. And I fundamentally want to say, like, this is a reason that you shouldn't fucking vote for Joe Biden. Because he's had a really patchy record on abortion.
Well, exactly. Well, that's the other thing. Like, what's very frustrating to me is the fact that a lot of Democrats, you know, I said this before. I said this about healthcare, and, you know, during the 2018 elections and pretty much every day since this shit show started. But ever since this shit show started, what I've wanted from my leaders, from the people in my party, is bravery. Bravery in the face of something that is maybe politically unpopular or scary or could cost them. And this is one of those times where, you know, I need my leaders to stand up and say, no, this is not some wishy-washy bullshit, not some, you know, oh, there's a center here. But no, I want them to stand up and say, this is not how this is going to go. That's why I elected them. That's why I'm a Democrat. That's why I give money. I need them to be brave in this moment. And that's why inherently why I don't like Joe Biden. He's the least brave person that I've ever seen in politics. That's actually not true. That's not true. But he's up there. Like, he's not brave. He's not taking a stand. And that is ultimately, that's what rubs me the wrong way about so many of these candidates, is they're not brave. And I need someone brave, because we've been dealing with Trump and these Republicans and Jeff Sessions and Barr and all of this shit, and we need bravery to push back against it.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's really key for me is that when I see the women who are running, specifically Senator Harris, Senator Warren, Senator Gillibrand, there was like a recent like study or there was like somebody reported the fact that they said fight more in their speeches than any of the male candidates. And that is fundamentally because they understand that this is not just a fight for certain policies. This is not just a fight for beating Trump. This is a fight for our values. And one of the fundamental values of the Democratic Party in recent years has been to support the women's right, support a woman's right to choose, right? It is so fundamental because it is about bodily autonomy. It is about not punishing women for making their own healthcare decisions. And if we can't stand up for that, literally, what are we standing for? What are we doing? What are we here for? Right. And I'm like reminded of like Kirsten Gillibrand. She said something in, I think, 2018. She was giving a speech at some place and she was like, we're not here to help people. Let's go the fuck home. Right. So if these candidates aren't here to help people, right, why the fuck are they on this stage? Why are they getting 65,000 donors? Right. And that's what really, really frustrates me is you cannot play to the center on abortion. Right. There is no center on abortion. You know, you can argue that there's a center on so many other issues, on immigration, on regulation, on et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. But abortion is fundamentally a binary choice, in my view. Right. It is about whether or not you believe a person should be able to make their medical decisions with their doctor or you think the government has a role in that.
Right.
And the government does not have a role in that because the way that the government wants to regulate that is to fundamentally make it possible to criminalize healthcare.
I mean, like this goes back to so many other things that have been going on that have happened in this this news cycle might as well be 84 years ago. But I mean, like there's a domestic gag rule now. Right. This is not just about this. And also, I would also like to point out that in Alabama today, the Republicans trying to pass this bill that would criminalize abortions in all cases and prosecute both doctors and the person who's pregnant and who wants an abortion is that they know that it's fucking wrong because they tried to pass it without standard procedure, without doing a roll call vote first. They were trying to do it without telling the Democrats. I mean, they know this is fucking wrong. Everyone knows this is fucking wrong. And you're right. There's no center. This is not a choice. It's either the government plays a role in medical decisions or they don't. It's that simple. So, I mean, this is obviously one of my hot button topics, but it's something, and again, this also speaks to the importance of local politics. You know, this isn't just about who we're electing as president or fuck, even as senator or rep or congressman. This is about who we elect in our local positions, our state assemblies, our state senators, our council women, our council people. I mean, it is about looking at every level of government and saying, I want to be accurately represented there. You know, obviously the presidential ones are the sexiest and it goes down from there. But the ones that we really have to keep our eyes on are these local ones because that's where this kind of shit happens. These are state senates. These are state laws. This has nothing to do with senators or the president or any of that. And we really have to keep our eyes on that.
Yeah. And if I can mention one Congress race, just because it's important, is recently Dan Lipinski, who is a congressperson, is basically he's facing a challenge, a Democratic challenge. He's a Democrat, right? But he is deeply, deeply fucking anti-choice, right? And so his progressive challenger is Marie Newman. And the reason she's challenging him and the reason that we should support her challenge is because she is pro-choice. Right. And so what I want to point out is that it's not just Republicans who are fucking this up. It is also Democrats who allow there to be no progress on this issue, who allow to think that there are two sides to this. And there aren't two sides to this. Exactly as I've said before, there is the fact that people should be allowed to make their own medical decisions. And so I think that's really important when you are voting, when you are thinking about supporting a candidate for a race, is to look at where they stand on your values, not just specific policies, right? To look at their whole record and to look at them as a whole person and to realize and to think about whether or not they are going to vote with you on your values that are most important to you, right? So a candidate can be really, really good on certain issues, or they can make a really good speech here and there. But if they fundamentally go wishy-washy on issues like abortion or civil rights or women's rights, you know there is something there that needs to be explored more before you make your decision. And so it's not about just standing with every single Democrat. It really is about understanding where this issue of abortion lands with you and voting on that. And for most people listening to this, it's going to stand with, I support a woman's
right to choose. Where is that race, Lipinski being challenged?
Lipinski is challenged, one second. He is the representative for Illinois' third congressional district, and he's a Democrat. He's been holding the seat since, I think, 2005.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, these are the races that we have to focus on. And, this is not an issue that's going to be going away anytime soon. So we just have to add it to the list of bullshit we're fighting against every single day. So,
Elections have motherfucking consequences.
Everything from your city council to the president, motherfucking consequences.
Yeah. Because we fucked up in 2016, but we cannot fuck up in 2020. And not just on the presidential level, but also on every single level. Because just as people who are really, really passionate about gun control, who are passionate about immigration reform, who are passionate about so many other issues, you have to make this your issue if you're passionate about it, or people aren't going to listen. Right?
So I think to finish up, I think for an action item for this week, donate to NARAL and Planned Parenthood. I know we're all donating to presidential candidates and we're, there's so many things that need our attention, but this is one of those things where right now the groups that are fighting for abortion rights and the rights of women and people who can get pregnant are so, so important. So Planned Parenthood and NARAL are both excellent organizations to donate to. So,
yep. And also remember that because this law in Georgia does not go into effect until January 2020, you can still get abortion care and health care in Georgia if you need reproductive care. And so find organizations, if you're not in Georgia, to donate to. There are abortion funds out there for every single state. There's a national network of abortion funds. So every single fight that you engage in is going to help and is going to play into how we talk about this issue in 2020. You got to make it
exactly.
Your issue.
And then one last thing that is on topic, actually, that I want to make an action item. Mother's Day is on Sunday, talking about abortion and abortion rights and abortion care. There is a fantastic organization called National Bailout, and they use the hashtags Free Black Mamas, and they work to bail out mothers, particularly mothers of color, queer women, trans women, and women who have children who are sitting in jail mostly because they can't afford bail. So nationalbailout.org, they are working to bail out Black mothers for Mother's Day. So talking about abortion, talking about kids, talking about being a parent, this is also something we didn't touch on, but we did touch on the fact that these sort of abortion laws disproportionately affect women of color, queer women, trans women, and poor women. So nationalbailout.org is a great intersection of these and helping get these women free. Like I said, most of them are only sitting in jail because they can't afford bail. So let's get them home for Mother's Day. So with that, I think that's it for us, Varsha. Thank you so much for sticking around. I know we had this unplanned hiatus and you all have been so patient with me, and I really appreciate it. And Varsha especially has been so patient.
Thanks so much for listening. And we're so glad to be back from hiatus. I hope you take these action items to heart, and I wish you all a really great weekend. Remember to practice some compassion.
Yeah. So again, thank you so much for sticking with us and being patient as I take care of my mental health. I also want to give a shout out to my baby sister Kaylee, who just graduated from Michigan State with a degree in plant biology and will be going to Germany for grad school. I'm so proud of her. And I was just in Michigan for the graduation, so, which is why I have a very thick Midwestern accent this week. So, all right, thank you so much, and We'll be back with you soon.